50, 51, 52, 53. Okay, so we have enough.
He's hard at work right now. I happen to know he's
very worried.
Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahana Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, text 23. Some accept the philosophy of oneness, breaking through the barriers of gross material world, the barriers of the gross material world, resting in the subtle material world, and pretending to remain in a trance of meditation, they take shelter of yoga. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Some philosophers do not believe in the soul's natural knowledge, nor do they completely believe in material logic, right? Because the natural knowledge then would mean the knowledge of how they understand that their existence is eternal, their relationship with the Lord, right? That their source of happiness is from somewhere else. All these different kinds of those aspects. And also then if they come in contact again with Krishna consciousness, that they understand that their position within the material world is unfortunate, right? So some don't believe that it has natural knowledge, because if you're talking about oneness, then you merge back into the Brahman. There can't be individual existence, so there therefore cannot be individual consciousness. Therefore, you can't think that there's a source of this knowledge other than yourself, because you are that oneness. You know, it's that, so it becomes, you can't actually, therefore, the soul can't actually have knowledge. But even though their process is based on jnana, they negate knowledge actually in the soul. So then the knowledge that they're working with then technically is material knowledge. But at the same time, as they say that material logic itself isn't quite the thing because there's something beyond. So they kind of get stuck here, you see? Because of these elements, these material elements, they have a problem. Others, accepting the idea of the soul's natural knowledge, believe in one God, right? Because then there's that idea, if you have the one God, so if you accept the natural knowledge, then you can accept there's an original God. If you don't accept the natural knowledge, then it's either materialism or liberation, right? So the understanding of that there's one God, that will then establish that you can appreciate, or it's the other way around. If you appreciate here, though others accepting ideas of the soul's natural knowledge believe in one God. Filled with, because otherwise, if you believe in many gods, just the demigods, then you can't actually believe in the knowledge that my happiness comes from some supreme source. Because this is that there's so many, so there is no supreme source. So it's kind of in between, right? Mm-hmm. Filled with various mental speculations, they take shelter of a rapt trance of meditation. However, their meditational trance is not the real thing. It is only a trick. In their pretended meditation, they pretend to break through the walls enclosing the material world, and then they pretend to see the world of spirit, right? Because you sit there, you know, because they have all kinds of things, you know, you see there, see the lotus opening, and, you know, they can go on and on. It means, depending on who it is, they're really good, right? You know, they know how to say it and all these kind of things, yes.
Do they really see the whole, or it's just...
They can see it if you have good, how you say?
Imagination,
you know, so it depends upon your ability. Then you can see all these things, but the point is you're seeing it with the mind. It's just material logic, so it's not real. It's based on your previous experiences. All it is it's like a dream. You're just putting it together very nice. You're more in control of how it's going together rather than not, you know? Because a dream, you don't know what's going to happen in the dream, you know? I mean, you really sincerely think you're in the toilet, right? Once you lock the door. When you turn around, you're not. I always find that one, you know, you're frantically looking for a bathroom, then you finally find one, and then you go in and close the door, and you turn around, and you're out in the field. Nice green, pleasant field, flowers, it's kind of like, where's the bathroom? You know, then you go looking again, you know.
Is this a real example?
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah. Of course, you have to have some sort of feel. Otherwise, it's that, you know, you go into the toilet and then you're back out on the street.
Yeah.
It happened. Yeah. Okay, they take a rapt trance of meditation. You know, they really focus on that, really get into that, that's going to make things happen. But it's still... They pretend to break through the enclosing material world, and they pretend to see the world of spirit, but they're making it up how it's going, you know, and just if they have that kind of feeling, then they say that it's happened, you know. Why is their meditation only a pretense, right? Because he said it's a pretense. So why? The spiritual world is revealed only in a genuine trance of meditation. That means on the Lord. It is not revealed in this pretended trance. Right? Just because you sit down and try to control the breath and make the mind peaceful and put on some nice music and, you know, control the sound and all that doesn't mean that it's there. It has to be meditation on the Lord in devotion, right? That's the only way you'll know the Lord. He is spirit, so if it's not on him, you actually won't get it. Otherwise, it's just pretended. You know? Seeing only the subtle material world, the world of thoughts, they think they have seen the final spiritual abode of the spiritual beings, right? Because you just go into the mental world, just the thoughts going on. This, yeah.
Could we call this kind of like Sahaja Yoga? We're
talking here just any of these processes, because okay. That's actually, it means yeah. Technically is that all of them are like that,
okay.
Right? Because here Patanjali, and that means what are they seeing? Unless they follow the actual thing and see the super soul, then they're going. But otherwise, they think he's in the mode of goodness. So it's not real, so they're not actually seeing the Lord. They're seeing an imagined form in the mode of goodness. Right? And then, but from that, they want to either merge or get yogic powers or that. But someone who's a devotee, then they know it's the Supreme Lord. So they see the Lord, then they can surrender to the Lord. Like that. So you do have where it can work nicely, but who's doing that,
yeah.
Right? Because we can basically safely say, because meditation is for Satya Yuga,
mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. It means in Kali Yuga, no one has 36,000 years to spend, you know, doing this. And the shortest we ever hear of is like the Prachetas and that, 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. You don't hear of shorter than 10,000 years, right? Except for, you know, Dhruva Maharaj, you know, 6 months, okay. You know, he stopped breathing, you know, the whole thing. Like that. So you can understand he was really, really upset. You know? I mean, here you have, what is it? The great-grandson of Lord Brahma, right? Kshatriya, right? And he's been insulted.
On his stepmom.
Yeah, so... It's going to be good. Okay, the spiritual worlds are revealed only in a genuine trance of meditation. It is not revealed in this pretended trance. Seeing only the subtle material world, the world of thoughts, they think they have seen the final spiritual abode of the spiritual beings. In truth, they have taken shelter of the world of subtle matter, the world of thoughts, right? So you come up with all kinds of stuff like this. I mean, so you get into these new agey kind of books and this and that, and all kinds of jazz is there, seeing all this one and that one, and you know, all the different things. And, you know, so it's just thought. These are things that can come up in the mind, putting together things and all that, the kind of dream that one has just... seeing the world of thoughts, just where the mind functions. And so seeing that, they think that's spiritual. You know, that's the point. They don't know what is spiritual. Right? They can be. They don't even know who they are. So how are they going to see the spiritual world? So they're not getting beyond pranamoya here, right? But there's some glimmer of some other aspects, but they don't actually, it's not spiritual. But we say, well, maybe it's kind of spiritual. No, it's not at all, because it's just the mind. Spiritual means it's in connection with the Lord, based on devotion to the Lord, according to the Acharyas. That will get, or the Lord reveals. You know, one can't just do meditation.
Can we say there's a desire for something spiritual?
There is, but then they'll come in contact, if they're actually desirous, sincerely, they'll come in contact with the bona fide devotees, because that's the only way you'll get the process, is through the devotees. So if they haven't come in contact with the devotees, they're not necessarily sincere. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, sincere in their particular material attempts. You know, but it doesn't mean that they're spiritually sincere, because they don't know what spiritual is. You know, how do you be sincere about something you don't know about? Right? Does that make sense? So you want that, then the Lord will give.
So they'll be seeking something nice.
Yeah, something nice, something pleasant, something peaceful, some more knowledge or understanding or, you know, something. It means it's always going to be a good quality like that. So from that point, it's a nice thing. So as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it's preliminary to spiritual life. But it's until you come in contact with the bona fide devotees that only then you can actually contact the real spirit.
What if they're claiming that they want something spiritual, or they're behaving in a way as they do, but then they come into contact with devotees and they reject it?
Yeah, so that means they weren't, because it means if I talk about something, it sounds, just talking about it, for some, that itself is the experience they're looking for. You know, that's all. Because it's not an uncommon thing. You know, so when the opportunity is there and they take it, then you'll say, here's the actual secret. Right? You know, because so many opportunities are there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Turn it off?
Sorry, I just remember a story. Somebody went to Prabhupada and said, Swamiji, when I chant japa, I see a blue light floating in front of me.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada said, don't worry, keep chanting and it'll go away.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, our own ideas of what it should be, that they'll all, don't worry, it'll go away. that one's so good. Because I think, oh yeah, oh no, you're seeing the blue pearl. The world of subtle matter and the world of gross matter are different in this way. The world of gross matter is the world perceived by the material senses, and the world of subtle matter is the world of thoughts perceived by the mind. Subtle matter was manifested before gross matter was manifested. This, the material world, is divided into two parts, the world of the gross material elements and the subtle, effulgent world of thoughts. The astral body described by the Theosophists is an effulgent material body made of thoughts. This is the subtle material body, or the mind. The subtle, glorious world described in Patanjali's Yoga Shastra and in the philosophy of the Buddhist is again only the subtle material world, the world of thoughts, right? So this is clear. So even Patanjali says, because unless it's devotion to the Lord, how will it go beyond? Right? He talks about the supreme, but he doesn't talk about devotion. Right? The spiritual world is different. It is different from the gross and subtle material worlds. It is also different from the liberation, Kaivalya, described in Patanjali's Yoga Shastra. Right? So then you'll have the gross, you'll have the subtle, you'll have, you know, the Brahman, and then you'll have the spiritual world.
Could we equate subtle to the celestial planets in a way?
Not necessarily. Because it's not necessary that one's thoughts are moving there, because the point is people that are there in the mode of goodness. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, what was her name? Was it Urvasi? I don't remember, but remember there was that Apsara. And she was going to, somehow it was arranged she would spend time with that king, or live with the king.
She eats food cooked in ghee.
Yeah, she'll only eat food cooked in ghee. She, you know, she says she won't tolerate seeing him naked. Yeah, so this is from the heavenly planets. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? You know, so therefore, for them to eat anything else and to walk around naked, that's for animals. So how many people in this world who are talking about their thoughts and maybe does that touch the celestial and all that have that kind of a mentality?
Yeah, no problem.
Yes, so the point is it's not, they're not getting to the heavenly planets. It's just the world of thoughts. You know, so much thought is there. Mind is an element. And so everybody's mind is a portion of that element. You know, just like this rock, it's a portion of the atoms of earth. You know, so it's a portion of atoms of mind. And so then, you know, there's that whole sphere of mind. And then there's all the thoughts that you've ever thought. Does that make sense? Right. So you just put all those together because you're only going to function within what you've experienced. Right? And so, you know, and what's of value to you at this point. You know, so then that will be what's prominent. So you put that together and come up with something. So it seems nice, it's pleasant, it's that, you know, depending on who they are, it comes out nicer. You know, if you're Mr. Crowley, it comes out a little less nice. You know, and so, you know, it's just a matter of what it is you're trying to get from it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Patanjali's Yoga Shastra does not describe the world of the spirit. In describing the practices performed by the aspiring yogi, the Yoga Shastra explicitly describes the soul and his relationship with God. However, in describing liberation, the Yoga Shastra does not say anything about God or about the liberated soul's relationship with God. Right? So you have to understand tricks. Otherwise, this is the problem because it looks the same. Right? It has similarities. That, okay, he's describing the nature of the soul as the spirit, and then describing God, you know, and the relationship like this. But then he doesn't actually go into talking about the liberated position, the relationship with God. So therefore, he's not actually talking about the spiritual. It has that element of moksha in it, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, but those are all considered material. Right? Does that make sense? So this dharma, artha, kama, moksha, then its point is it's not actually spiritual because they're not going beyond that. Right? If the attention is that the individual souls and God have merged and become one, then the yoga philosophy is not different from the impersonalist, monist, advaita. The philosophy described by Patanjali in his Yoga Shastra does not bring eternal auspiciousness to the spiritual soul. Right? It gets out of the material world, but it doesn't actually bring about the spiritual position. The philosophy of the Yoga Shastra may be considered one of many philosophies that stay in between the world of gross matter and the world of spirit. Right? Because we mentioned that there is, you have the, within the material, then you have the gross and subtle, then you have the spiritual, then you have what's in between. It's not gross or subtle, and it's not actually spiritual. So it's in between. Does that make sense?
In between means spiritual, not devotional.
It means in if we're using that level, that we're accepting the aspect of the spiritual, we'll be using a different context because then you're not considering the mind. Then we would say yes, then that's spiritual, and then there's the devotional, which is beyond. But in this case, we're actually, because we're using a more generic form of spiritual. So spiritual means the relationship with God. So that temporary situation of themselves on the liberated platform isn't actually spiritual. Because it's temporary. Because spiritual means eternal.
When you say it's in between, then it is. When we say it's in between?
It's somebody mundane, you know, is just visiting. In other words, for describing exact position, then what you're using there, you have material, spiritual, devotional. But this is describing from the platform of how the mind's working. Right? So the mind is still within the realm of the mind's functioning because you're using moksha. Because the mind can function in dharma, artha, kama, and moksha without having to get the blessings of the Lord. means, of course, you do the right activity and then it works. But you have to that element of actually trying to please the Lord and getting His blessing, so you actually understand what's spiritual. Because here, being on the spiritual platform doesn't mean you understand what's spiritual. Because it's still the Lord's effulgence, and you're the individual soul who's just happened to be in that effulgence. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty.
Somehow those they come in the second day.
Yeah, yeah. There's one sitting up there now. So that's different from these guys are so weird. Sitting there hanging out with that, yeah, it's all happening, and then that one goes and okay, well there's another one over here, you know. So.
That's the female, not the male ones.
They're making a nest in the first class. And things were falling down, sticks were coming down.
No, you just turn on the fan a bit, and then they kind of figure out.
maybe it's time to move on.
It means you turn on just a touch, so it starts to move. You just turn on for a spin, and then they get moved. You want them to be comfortable, but not to the point where they create a disturbance.
Yeah. You didn't get anything.
No, I didn't get any problems.
Okay. The philosophy of the Yoga Shastra may be considered one of many philosophies that stay in between the world of gross matter and the world of spirit. Mm-hmm. Right? So in between those two. So that means it's just touching on the spiritual, but it's not actually spiritual. Yeah. And it's going into the subtler aspects of the mind. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Of the material energy. So you're doing the subtle world and then touching on that spiritual. But the point is they never actually situate themselves there. Yeah. So does that make sense? So in other words, real spiritual means establishing your relationship with the Lord. So real liberation means that. Mm-hmm. So they're coming to the level of liberation, but it's not actually permanent. Mm-hmm. So from another definitions, we'll call them transcendentalists. But at the same time, is they're not actually going to be eternally transcendently situated. So from that platform, they're not actually transcendentalists.
Can we say it's an impediment, actually?
It is an impediment. Because then you're trying to get out of something and get rid of something that's useful. In other words, one's trying to get rid of the material existence, but just as a... not as... using it for, instead of switching it from using it for yourself to using it to please God, you're just getting rid of it totally, so you have nothing left. So then spiritual means I have nothing. I have nothing, there is nothing, I am nothing, and somehow or another that's spiritual, right? As opposed to, it's material means I see this place separate from God, and spiritual means I see it connected with God. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
The Lord Buddha based his preaching on Atmaramata, this aspect of Krishna, because he said like...
I don't think it would be that far. He was trying to get them to stop following the Veda. So therefore your voidness, because Atmaramata is still a person is there. Right? Mm. But the person hasn't expanded his energies. Right? So here it's just a matter of that there's nothing. Because in Atmaramata there's existence, but in Buddhism there's no existence. There's nothing. You know. So, but the point is nothing has to exist somewhere. So then, where does this nothingness come from? You know, what is its basis? What is it existing in? So, you know, it becomes weird. You know, just kind of like a dog chasing their tail or something. Yes.
What you just said about using everything, like, you know, seeing everything as spiritual, not material, the other day I asked you a question about, you know, that it's the highest level to see everything as spiritual, but you said that you have to see it, the separation between material and spiritual first, and then everything is spiritual. So if you're able to see everything in connection in a spiritual way, and therefore connect everything to Krishna, isn't that a really, really, really high level?
It's not really, really, really high, because the point is that from our point, it's not so high.
In general, like compared to
a common person, because they don't even care about liberation. Okay. Means it's rare. How many people you find actually even worry about dharma, about, you know, the nature of, you know, everything in the world? So socially, how does it function together? You don't find many of those. So basically what you find is a lot of people on the selfish platform of sense gratification, but willing to just follow enough that they kind of work with others, but it's not actually the first choice. And then you have those that have the idea that if we all just work together, everything will be wonderful. You know? You understand? So you're talking about the lower levels of consciousness. So how many are actually interested to understand liberation? So that's two stages above that. You know, but for us, it's still within the material world. So for us, that understanding is where, for us, that's kind of where, if you're into the intellectual aspect, that's where you start. Does that make sense?
So can you give like an example of what that means, like being able to tell the difference between material and spiritual? Like, does that mean the mundane world, like?
It means that everything here is Krishna's energy. So what's the material aspect?
Exactly. So then
it's our vision of it. We see it as it's ours to enjoy. That's what makes it material.
Okay.
If we see it to be used in Krishna's service, then it's spiritual.
Okay.
Right? But it's still made out of the inferior energy.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's why the Upanishad is saying everything's Brahman. But they take it, everything's Brahman, there's only one kind of Brahman. No, there's many kinds of Brahman. Like that. That's so they can't tell, they have no distinguish, they can't distinguish what's spiritual, you know? No, they know that's all Brahman, but it's actually a mundane concept of Brahman. Right?
I think the thing that confused me is using the word what, whereas it's not about what, it's about the mood, so...
It's about the mood.
Yeah, so it's not what, because nothing is and everything is.
Yeah. Means the nothing is if you see it connected to you, the nothing is.
Exactly.
And if you see it connected with the Lord, everything is.
Yeah.
Because is here is the verb. Okay. 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 That is why the soul seeking true spiritual happiness do not like it, right? Means the yoga Patanjali, right? Because the problem is then it's you know, you just, in other words, there's an affinity towards the subtle material world. That's all. So therefore the yoga and the meditation and all those kind of things. Text 24. Some philosophers say God created the world to give the individual souls an opportunity either to enjoy sense pleasures or to accumulate piety.
Why not both?
Huh?
Can we go for both?
No, it's either this or that. Means you have to accumulate piety, then you can enjoy the sense pleasures. Then it runs out, then you accumulate more. But the point is where's the opportunity here to go back to Godhead or something else? No, it's just...
If you want to have fun, you have to be bad. That's basically what they're saying.
No, but you first have to be good to be bad.
Yeah, yeah. But you're only good, so you can be bad later.
Oh, that's there.
All right. Sorry. Can I ask something that's slightly off topic, but got to do with what I just asked?
Off topic.
Yeah, it's like slightly.
Okay, but it hasn't gone sour yet.
Okay. this, I think it's, Prabhupada says that, or devotees have told me anyway, that women have a, they have trouble defining material and spiritual. Do you agree with that?
Basically.
Okay, so in what we just talked about, how does that work? So what, they have trouble finding out what...
Means here in spiritual, this is then going back to what we're saying there, is you have material, spiritual, and devotional. So for women, it's very easy to go from material to devotional. Because the spiritual means, you know, no senses, no mind, no variety, nothing. So that doesn't really make sense to the women. You know what I'm saying? So for them, it's you take what's there and you're changing your consciousness is that instead it's for myself, it's for Krishna. That works very easy. And so then they just skip that middle system and go there. Men generally have to analyze it unless it's, you know, something good. You know what I'm saying?
So then why is everyone going on about that? That's an impediment and it's a problem and all this. It doesn't seem like...
Well, no, but what's an impediment?
Well, it's the fact that women can't differentiate between material and spiritual.
Because if they apply it between the gross and the subtle and call the subtle spiritual, then it's a problem.
Sorry, I didn't get it.
Means the world of gross matter that you can see and the world of the mind.
Okay.
Because generally speaking, a lot of people who start different movements based on some so-called spiritual, you know, are women who go into this subtle platform of the mind, consider that spiritual, and then profess that.
Like New Age.
Yeah, like New Age. But that kind of thing's always been there. You go back into the, you know, back thousands of years, people were burnt at the stake for this.
Theosophy he's talking about is Madame Blavatsky. She was the main
theosophy. Madame Blavatsky. Okay. Yes, it's not a, it's a, you know, Aurobindo. You know, was then he was a man, but then that French lady, she made it popular. You know what I'm saying?
But then for devotees, it doesn't
seem
to be an issue.
It can be an issue. It's just like what we were saying before is, okay, I'm a devotee, so I'm doing devotional service, so anything I do is devotional service.
No.
That's where the problem will come up.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
That's means everybody will do it, but for the ladies, much of the time, that's very much of a problem. Because then, okay, but so my house is, I'm a devotee, so my house is automatically spiritual. No, you have to make it spiritual. But then in making it spiritual, how do you do that? Then the insecurity comes up, is that, well, do I lose the house? Because mostly people thought, oh, you have to be renounced, this, that, blah. But that's how men are going to look at it. So for women, renounced means it's not for me, it's for someone else. You know, saying, like, you know, can do something for yourself, you can do something for someone else that they can relate to. But if it's based on the bodily platform, that something else is still material, though it's a better quality. But when it's done for Krishna, so all you have to do is replace that someone else as Krishna, and then it's done. So the difference between material and spiritual means, here, that women can understand is that if it's for myself, myself means directly myself or the extended sense gratification, you know, family, this, that, all based on the bodily platform, that's material. When I do it to actually please Krishna as a person, that's spiritual. That women can relate to quite easily. Does that make sense? So all they have to do is switch that. They don't have to get rid of the house, get rid of everything so there's nothing left, and then with nothing now start to add in the devotion.
Wow. So maybe you don't have to answer this if it's going a bit somewhere yet. But there's one part where Prabhupada says that your child is your deity, so where does that fit?
No, there's a difference between deity and God. Deity is something you worship.
Well,
you're focused on your attention.
Deity worship in the temple.
No, you have to see the context.
Okay.
Otherwise, there. Yeah, because the point is, this means the mother is going to take care of the child. So, you know, the focus of her attention is always there. So in that same way is how you'd want to take care of the deity. Does that make sense? Because he also says taking care of your child, that's not your service. Right? It's your duty, but that's not your devotional service. Because otherwise some moms, they stop chanting, they stop coming to the program, all they do is take care of the child, and they say, that's my devotional service. Prabhupada said, that's not your devotional service. You still have to be chanting your japa. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So you have to be able to balance all these. You had something? Okay, went there.
Okay. Oh yeah. Okay. I just was to the point that Srila Prabhupada seemed like he was preaching more mainly to the ladies when he said that you should use everything in Krishna consciousness. It means keeping the spiritual platform, like whatever you have, you just make it devotional.
Yeah. No. For the man, it's the same thing. It's just what you're trying to get to. But many times the men like to take that extra step of analyzing it and then using it. You know what I'm saying? Because the woman doesn't need to analyze it to use it. If she sees a value in it, she uses it. She doesn't see a value, she doesn't use it. So Krishna consciousness is whatever you value, use it for Krishna. You know, but then the men like to analyze whether it's of value or not. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It means for the woman, it's a diamond. Right? You know, for the man, it's, you know, this particular kind of diamond, it's, you know, a VVS, and it's this and that, and so much this carrot and that carrot, and that it came from this particular mine, and this and that, and the woman couldn't care less, unless socially it's going to have an impact, you know. Does that make sense? You know, yeah, like that, exactly. Oh, but yours is only VS, mine's VVS. Then it has some meaning, right? Does that make sense?
Okay. Very, very, very special.
Very, very small. It's an inclusion in a diamond.
Yeah. So that means that it basically means it's nothing. I think then there's...
VVS is almost nothing.
Yeah. And then there's one above that. What is it? IF or...
Yeah.
Something like that. Just means like flawless.
Pure.
It's just like... You know, those are the ones that they make movies about. You know, those are the ones that they're stealing and moving around the world, and you know, empires are lost over and stuff like that. You know, does that make sense? Like that. But how many of them are there, right? So generally, yeah. Is that okay? Just so you know. Yes.
Can we enjoy sense pleasures and accumulate piety if we do it according to the Vedas?
Okay, so this is okay. Now I know where I'm going with this. Okay. Either to enjoy sense pleasures or to accumulate piety.
Can do it both.
Well, the thing is that you're accumulating piety. Just like, can you make money and spend money?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Somebody makes, somebody spends.
Okay. So, in other words, some philosophers say God created this world to give the individual souls an opportunity to either, as the woman, enjoy sense pleasures, or as the man, to accumulate piety.
That sounds good.
Huh? That works now? Okay. Everybody comfortable with that?
He shouldn't even be here now. Huh? He should be out.
Making money.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it all the time.
No, this is just, you know, because he's made nicely the money, so he gets a little. He gets an opportunity to come to the class.
Oh.
Like that. Because at some point he'll be out, he can't come to the class, so this is his reward.
Okay. That's nice reward.
For accumulating piety.
Yes. So.
No, the point is there are two different things. Making money and spending money are two different things. It's not that both aren't going on. It's not that they're not doing the yajnas, accumulating piety, giving in charity, and they're not also enjoying themselves. But what you're doing to accumulate piety will give you your sense pleasure in the future. So the sense pleasure now has come from accumulated piety in the past. So they both go on at once. But you can only do one at a time. You know, it's like you have the money. You can invest it or you can spend it. Okay, then that means, so then it's, you know what I'm saying? But that's the thing, that's the point. You can't do them both at once.
Because in previous ages, it looked like they were still enjoying the senses a lot and quite pious.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's the piety today, just like you're going to work today. That makes money for later. And what money you have now that you're enjoying is from previous work. So they're both going on at once, but you can only do one at a time. You know what I'm saying? You sit down to the yajna, you're not enjoying yourself. You're accumulating the piety. You know what I'm saying? And then after the yajna, why is it not a great yajna? Then you sit around and enjoy yourself. You know? Does that make sense?
The bhakti process is different because it's joyously performed.
Yeah, because that you're not. It's not worried about here. So it itself makes you happy. Hare Krishna. It itself makes you happy, and at the same time, it is bringing out the yes. Does that make sense?
It's just interesting. We're entering the Judeo-Christian part of the curriculum, so these points may hit home for me.
Yeah. You don't. I say you don't even need the. You know, the in other words, the hyphenated element is not so important. Like that. Yeah, you could call it the Abrahamic. Like that, with that would cover. Okay. So some philosophers say God created this world to give an opportunity to enjoy sense pleasures. Then, after sinlessly enjoying and enjoying many sense pleasures, we will perform pious deeds and attain God's mercy. However, if God had truly created this material world for the soul's pleasure, he would not have created it with so many defects. After all, he is all-powerful, and whatever he wishes is done at once. If he had created the material world for the soul's pleasure, he would have made it faultless. If he created the material world for the soul's performing pious deeds, he would have made it very difficult from... He would have made it very different from the way it is. And because it's difficult to perform pious deeds also. Of this there is no doubt. Why is there no doubt of this? Because in the material world, pious deeds are not easily performed by every creature. Right? Because otherwise, it was for pious deeds, that would have been easy. For sense pleasure, that would have been easy. Right? But we find that both of them are difficulties. So, in other words, it's not meant for enjoying the senses or for piety. It's actually meant for going back to Godhead. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, text 25. Some philosophers say that because of the first living entity, sin, all the other living entities are imprisoned in the material world. Later, punishing himself for their sins, God delivers the living entity.
He makes it sound very good.
Punishing himself?
You have to... The upper sampradayas. Right? Okay, so in other words, the idea is that, okay... That someone's done something wrong, they get kicked out, right? And they get punished, and then every other living entity is punished. The fun part is when they got kicked out, there were already people there.
They were already punished before.
Well, just getting kicked out is punishment also. Mm-hmm. But the point is once getting kicked out, then they had children. And their children married local girls. Where'd they come from?
They're not considered people.
Humans.
You're going to marry your sons to not people?
No. Barbarians.
Oh, okay. They're taking it from that point. Okay, that answers it quite easily.
That's what they answer.
Okay. But now the point is now if they're goy.
That's another story.
Okay. But the point is then Cain and Abel's children, are they Jewish?
Yeah.
But the other village girls, then, oh, they converted.
Probably the wives.
The wives did. Okay.
Otherwise.
You don't worry about the men, it's just the wives. Oh, okay. Okay, so it's got it worked out. Okay. So.
Made from dirt, though.
They were just made from dirt?
Yeah, like Adam's rib and, you know, dirt.
The ladies.
Huh?
The rib?
Dirt and a rib.
Dirt in the rib.
Yeah. Good combination, probably.
Okay. The rib gives it some substance or something?
It forms.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So then it's got all the dirt in the right places. Okay. Okay, then later punishing himself for their sins.
He punished them already. Why would he punish himself also?
No, because then the point is that you're here and then you're feeling that that's sinful because of that original sin. So the you can only get rid of the original sin by him punishing himself. So that way, actually, you don't get punished.
No. You know, he got kicked out anyway.
Hmm? No, but here, God himself comes himself. And then punishes himself, and that way delivers everybody. That doesn't make sense? But you got half the planet believing this.
It actually does make sense, because people say, okay, then God, he messed it up, and he should
fix it.
No, really. Then we just have sit and watch, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not our fault, actually.
But the original sin wasn't God's fault.
No.
He gave.
But we didn't do it.
Oh, I see. We didn't do it. So then we're not actually. So then the problem is why are we being punished for the original sin?
That's the question.
Oh. Okay.
This is no how you say? This is no
fair.
No fair, exactly.
Yeah. So he should work it out himself.
Yeah.
Okay, so if he can work that out himself, then that would also imply that the managing of the creation can be done by himself also.
Yeah, of course.
But at the same time, as they'll say, he's not actually involved. Huh? Yeah, yeah. No, it's just the problem is there's just that lack of consistency.
Yeah, pieces of
yeah, pieces and here and there and stuff like that. You know, like they kind of left out that, what do you call it? Noah was actually a Manu. Noah was a Manu. And the important thing to say was the Vedas, you know, I mean, the animals, you need them. And, you know, that wasn't the important.
But they say that he's still punishing himself, so for all the sins in the future as well.
I don't know. They seem to like it because they keep the guru is always punishing himself. Right, you know, you think of, you know, some nicer thing like him with a sheep or something like that, you know, a piece of furniture, you know, something, you know. Right, you never see a picture of him finishing a nice chair or something and very happy about it, right, you know.
Yeah, he's always on the cross.
Yeah, yeah, you know, so it's just a bit more of it, you know. But I heard that was started later. That was like 3rd or 4th century, I think, they started that.
On the crosses.
Yeah, making that the symbol.
Yeah.
I think before that it wasn't. Probably with the Crusades.
There was that movement called Iconoclasm, where they wanted to destroy all icons and pictures. So they got rid of Mary, they got rid of pictures of Jesus, and they just replaced it with the cross instead.
Oh, okay. So it's first kind of symptoms of kind of the Protestant direction of getting rid of anything.
Yeah, yeah.
The iconoclasts.
Yeah, but then that was overturned later on. They let them back.
That means Jesus went up on the cross.
Oh yeah, and then put Jesus on the cross. They put him on the cross. Okay. Yeah. Okay, and then Mary came back. Okay. 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 Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Thinking about the virtues and faults of this world, some moralist monotheists conclude that this material world is not a place of unalloyed pleasures. Indeed, the sufferings outweigh the pleasures. They decided that material world is a prison to punish the living entities. If there is punishment, then there must be a crime. If there were no crime, then why would there be any punishment? What crime did the living entities commit? Unable to properly answer this question, some man of small intelligence gave birth to a very wild idea. God created the first man and placed him in a pleasure garden with his wife. then God forbade the man to taste the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Following the evil counsel of a wicked being, the first man and woman tasted the fruit of the tree of knowledge, thus disobeying God's command. In this way, they fell from the garden into the material world filled with sufferings. Because of their offense, all other living entities are offenders from the moment of their birth. Not since, so does that mean that before birth they're not offenders?
Before birth they don't exist.
Before birth they don't exist.
It's only one birth, actually. Huh? It's only one life.
Yeah. It's a bit narrow. Well, he did submit some men of small intelligence. Not seeing any other way to remove this offense, God himself took birth in a human-like form, took on his own shoulders the sins of his followers, and then died. All who follow him easily attain liberation, and all who do not follow him fall into an eternal hell. In this way, God assumes a human-like form, punishes himself, and thus liberates the living entities. An intelligent person cannot make sense of any of this.
Yes. This is a nice summary of Christianity.
it's really good. Like that. But it's from a position where it's not negative, it's not positive, it's just presenting it as it is. That's what's so unique about it. You know, because some they're against Christianity, so then they'll present it and they'll try to bring it out in that negative way, or it's about to be presented in the positive. But here it's just saying, well, this is what they're doing. Because basically that's it in a nutshell. There's not a whole lot beyond that. You know?
Apart from the last sentence, you know, if you read this to a Christian, they'd be like, Amen. And then the last one.
It doesn't make any sense out of this. Yeah. Well, they'd also probably have a problem with some men of small intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they should be able to refute the whole thing and then be upset. First, refute the whole thing, what he says.
And then be upset. Yeah. True. Text 26. These philosophers say, in his previous one, that the living entity's life begins at birth and ends with death. After death, he is not born again. After death, he attains the results of his actions in that one lifetime. Right? He's not born again. So that means he doesn't have another body that he's born into. But anybody ever told this to the born-agains? Okay. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. To accept this mixed up religion, one must first believe these rather implausible things. Quote, the living entity's life begins with birth and ends at death. Before birth, the living entity did not exist, and after death, the living entity will no longer stay in the world of material activities. Only human beings have souls. Other creatures do not have souls. Only extremely unintelligent persons believe this religion. In this religion, the living entity is not spiritual in nature. By his own will, God created the living entities out of matter. Oh, I see. That's the dirt and the rib part. So, then what was Adam made out of?
Just dirt.
So that means then the feminine is actually, it means we say it was, there's just some dirt and a rib, but that's a step up, because at least there's a rib. It's dirt and rib. Because, you know, Adam was just dirt.
Maybe add some water, some sun.
So then that means then it's not actually an insult. You're just actually stating the facts when you say someone's a dirt bag. No, I guess person would say dirt bag and a rib, and it starts to get, you know. Yeah.
That's interesting because Darwinists say that we evolved from like a primordial pool of ooze. That's not so far off from the dirt.
Wet dirt.
Just add water.
No, just add lightning bolt.
Yeah.
That's why no one eats soup out you know, in the open, outside when the storm is there. Otherwise, you'd be sitting there, lightning bolt to hit your bowl of soup, and who knows what will crawl out of it.
For 3 years.
Yeah, yeah, you know, something like that, you know.
Yeah.
So, therefore, no one eats soup outside in the storm.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, of course. Why are the living entities born into very different situations? The followers of this religion cannot say. Why is one living entity born into a house filled with sufferings? Another living entity born into a house filled with joys? Another living entity born into a house of a person devoted to God? And another living entity born into a wicked atheist's house? Why is one person born in a situation where he's encouraged to perform pious deeds, and he performs pious deeds and becomes good? Why is another person born in a situation where he's encouraged to sin, and he sins and becomes bad? The followers of this religion cannot answer all these questions. Their religion seems to say that God is unfair and irrational. Why do they say that animals have no souls? Why do birds and beasts not have souls like human beings? Why do the human beings have only one life, and because of their actions in that one life are rewarded in eternal heaven or punished with eternal hell? Right? It means, I mean, what kind of business deal is that? You know, it's like, you know, okay, you know, you put in, you know, just a temporary point, and then you get eternal benefit or loss from that. That doesn't sound, you know, very practical.
All right. The previous question about why does a person, I made it. Question to many Christians in Brazil, and they just
can't. No, it's just that they have nothing, because karma is not there. It's just, the big point is for your general person, they don't think about these things. So if you just say that, you know, well, the person, you know, it depends on his good deeds and stuff like that, because they'll always bring it to, you know, you have your choice and this and that. But they can't deal, and so for the normal person, they'll just, oh, okay, yes, you know. But for someone who thinks, then it's a problem, and then because of that, then they have a doubt in not just in this particular understanding of religion, but in religion in principle, or in God. If God made it like that, then, but if these guys are illogical, can't answer that, how do you know that what they're saying, how God is the way God is? You know, the point is people who can answer this, their definition of God, that would be something more to deal with. Right? So you don't throw the whole thing out just because you don't know. Because you ask the guy, well, how does the car work? And he doesn't know. You know, like that. And so, you know, he can sing you the song about how the wheels in the bus go round and round or something. You know, but and so therefore now you'll reject buses, you know. Like that. So that's the thing, because they can't explain karma and stuff and why the world's the way it is. That doesn't mean that one rejects the principle of God and who He is. Like that. In other words, there must be the proper understanding of God. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And even some priests, I mean, they get very scared in these areas when you start discussing it.
Because a priest means he has faith himself. Means you have an individual, they have faith. But generally a priest means he has faith and he's able to inspire others in that faith, right? That's why he becomes the leader of a community, right? But the point is inspiring that faith doesn't necessarily mean he's using an intellectual process, right? So generally they're taking something, you know, a passage, then seeing it from some unique angle, you know, if they're good, you know, they're able to, good meaning that they're clever. They see some, bring out some unique point that they haven't spoken on, and then try to make that practical in the people's life. And so they get inspired. But if why that works, the mechanics of that, they can't explain. That you have to go to theologians. So these questions you could probably get farther discussion with a theologian, because they're trying to find the intellectual answers. But the weakness is it's not by intelligence that you'll understand God. It's by God's grace. But that means you have to use your intelligence to do things that are according to what God says to do. Right? So that's the problem, because we think it has to be this or that. There's never the idea that it can be a combination. and that spiritual is beyond the material. So that's where the difficulties come up.
Is that there's a book by Satyaraj called Christianity and Krishna Consciousness. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No.
But there's a Reverend Hart who's discussing with him. He's a very nice person, very inclined to the philosophy. But at one point, when they get to the Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, he can't
grasp it. No, because the point is Achintya Veda, it means it's simultaneously one and different, and that how God's potency can make all things happen, then that means it's by God's grace we can appreciate it. That's where we're saying is that's the limit of the material intelligence, because it's something beyond that. Because, and one may say, no, but you have to have facts to found it. But every philosophy, every science starts with premise. Right? Means just these are the numbers, and these are the, means like when you go into math class, right? They start teaching you. They don't teach you why numbers work that way. They wouldn't have a clue. Right? They just say that numbers work this way, and here are the axioms on what they function on. Then, having accepted those axioms, then they teach you mathematics. You know what I'm saying? Psychology is going on axioms. You know, it says, you know, every you know, Freud, you know, every boy, you know, has affection for his mother. He's looking for his mother in every other woman. But how does that explain? But it's just an axiom. They start with that. Then they get into their analyzation. So everything, every site starts with a foundation and goes up to a particular point. You know, so this idea that if it's in connection with God, then you can't have that. That is supposed to be just pure science. But there is no such thing in the material world as pure science. Because it's always based on some elements that you accept by the mind, not the intelligence. You know, like we say, okay, the mind, the world is here for the living entities to enjoy. I like that. So therefore, I take that as a philosophy. Now I'll get into a philosophy to explain all the ways you can enjoy and what's proper enjoyment and what's not and what would be beneficial for that. You know, if I'm selfish, then I can do a certain amount, but if you are working for others' benefit, then it's even more. Right? You know, and then you get people take that further. So what does selfless mean? So that means you can't do anything for yourself. So how are you enjoying? I only work for everybody else's benefit, for the state and everything like that. You're taking it to an extreme, but then how are you enjoying? So why would everybody do that? Because you're saying everybody else will enjoy, but everybody's doing that. Who's enjoying? You know what I'm saying? So they get into all these, but they've taken this basic thing and then they can play with it. You know what I'm saying? Or it's all one, and it's all, there is no material like that. They take that as just a premise. They can't explain it, because when you get into details, there's no explanation. Right? But then they speculate on that and then try to apply that axiom into your life. You understand? So they're always starting with a premise. So the problem of starting with the premise of faith, that if you don't have faith, you can't understand. What's the problem with that? You're doing that in everything else. You know what I'm saying? It means if let us say I walk into a hospital and everybody is wearing white, you know, clothes. Am I comfortable? Right. What if I walk in and they're wearing like dirty, you know, leathers and, you know, just got off the motorcycle and they're wiping the grease off their hands? Right? No. So there's a basic premise that, okay, then, you know, clean and white, that's healthy. You know what I'm saying? So everything starts with the premise. But the point is if the premise doesn't originate in God's laws, that's where the problem. Otherwise, then everything you do after that will have a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So that would lead us to conclude that only Vedanta can make that claim.
Yes. Only Vedanta is the only one developed so much that all aspects of the philosophy are attended to. Right? So it can explain the principle of God, who he is as a person, your devotion, your relationship with him. All these things can be accounted for. While in others, they're only dealing with certain portions, because basically, as it is, it's either you're enjoying or you're doing piety. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So just like, let's say, of this, okay, just like take Christianity, okay, you have, of these two, you have a person who all he does is enjoy himself. And you have an old spinster that does nothing and just, you know, tries to be nice. Which of the two is the good Christian?
The second one.
Right? So this idea that you don't enjoy the world is okay. You're trying to do pious things so that you'll go to heaven. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, then generally, all these other ones is that then they're trying to enjoy and they can't function. You know what I'm saying? But this is the interesting thing, is these are the, you know, this specific one. You know, here that we're applying it here. But in the Abrahamic, your original one, they can kind of combine the two. You know what I'm saying? You ever seen, you know, there's this statement, enjoy? Like you see it on Coke, enjoy. Like that, you see it here and there. That's a Jewish concept. It's just, you know, yeah, enjoy, enjoy. You know, it's all about just enjoying. You do your piety, you enjoy. I did my good work, now I enjoy. So somehow the two of them go together because it's a culture. Well, the other one is just a philosophy, and there is no culture. They say the Christians don't have a culture. You know, that's Christian. It means that they follow a culture, of course. But there's no, as such, Christian culture. You know what I'm saying? Any person who believes in a truly kind and merciful God will find this religion completely unacceptable. Right? Because they'll say he's kind and merciful. But then why does all this happen? That's why they themselves have problems. But they maintain it through faith because they can't apply their intelligence. As soon as they apply intelligence, then there's problems. Right? So generally you see is they just have to keep to the sentimental, because if they don't, then they're bad. So therefore, if you can't analyze, then that means there can't be science. Therefore, then this religion has always been anti-science. Like that. Nowadays, they have to kind of accommodate because, you know, science kind of has a prominent position.
So in dealing with them, is it better to put them in a position where they can appreciate more God, or...
Generally, you see as if it's in a thing where that, you know, there's some sincerity, then you just talk about the devotion to God and this and that, and so then they can see is that process. We have that complete process of how to explain that devotion and things like that. The other is only if they're getting all uppity and you know, like that. You're considering themselves superior, all kinds of things. Then it's like, you know, consider yourself philosophy, but you can't even answer these simple things. You know, why? Because two people, you know, ate an apple or whatever it was. Now, you know, everybody's suffering. You know, but even if that is there, then even if there is, if that's the sin, you know, then the problem is then how are you going to get around that? You know, why is it that different people are born into different situations, that one is more of a suffering and one is less of a suffering? You know, and then whatever you start from, you only have this one lifetime. And then you get an eternal reward for one lifetime. I mean, how does this all work out? You eat an apple, you know, and then eternally you'll suffer. Right? You know,
it's one bad apple.
Yeah. Yeah. At the same time, it's the tree of knowledge. So that this must also be a reason why Christianity was so much opposed to science. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because they don't differentiate. I know that in the Jewish, the teaching is it's knowledge of your social position and stuff. Knowledge of that. So that's why then Adam and Eve means, because afterwards then they, because how God figured out that they had eaten the apple off the tree is that they were wearing clothes.
They were definitely not from the heavenly planet then.
Yes. Yeah, they were walking around naked. But then the point is then it gets, so they were naked, they're wearing clothes. So that means they were understanding that it's not good to wear clothes. So that kind of mundane knowledge, you know, that was the problem. So therefore, then you live in the world of that knowledge. So in other words, that was the knowledge of the material knowledge.
Bodily consciousness.
Yeah, bodily consciousness. But the same, yeah, does that make sense? So yeah. So in other words, they drop, but at the same time, it's whether they were naked is another thing, but it just means they're naked, meaning there's no material covering. You know, and then that becomes the material covering. So you can take it back and explain, but there's very few that actually can deal with that kind of explanation. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Isn't it a fig leaf march? Because that would be the Christian culture.
Yeah. Christian dress. That actually is the Christian dress. It's fig leaves. So does that mean the Pope that had all the statues in Rome, they put a fig leaf? That was then... Because before, yeah, David, all those guys are standing there with no clothes on, right? You know, he's wearing a helmet, you know. So one pope had to make plaster fig leaves and cover them all like that. So does that mean then he'd eaten from the apple from the tree of knowledge? Yeah, like this. So, you know, it goes back and forth. We don't have much consistency. Yeah, here it says. Then God and then took on his own shoulders the sins of his followers and then died. Okay. Okay, text 26. These philosophers say that the living entity's life begins at birth and ends with death. After death, he is not born again. After death, he attains the results of his actions in that one lifetime.
Can you just do that one?
Oh, yeah, we're at the bottom of this page. Somebody mm-hmm. thought I'd turn the page and we were at the top. Okay, yeah, that's where we finish. Text 27. He generally likes it when I don't know where I am. Maybe it's on the page before.
Good to review.
Bring it home, you know. Get the knowledge into the long-term memory. Text 27. These philosophers say that by cultivating fruit of... Oh, that's it. I picked up the page, I was going to put it, and then the question came, and I put it back down. So I knew we started at the top of the page. But then, yeah, okay. That by cultivating fruit of work and speculative philosophy, one should make improvements in the world and in this way please God. Right? Cultivating fruit of work and speculative philosophy, make improvements in the world. Right? Like that. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The followers of this religion have no power to worship God selflessly. In general, their idea is that by cultivating fruit of work and speculative philosophy, one should work to make improvements in the material world and in this way please God, right? Because if you're put here to enjoy, then if you improve the situation, then God will be happy, right? You know, God gives his son some money for investing, you know, like that. He invests it, he makes some profit, then the father's happy, right? By building hospitals and schools and by doing various philanthropic works, they try to do good to the world and thus please God. Worship of God by performing fruit of work, karma, and by engaging in philosophical speculation, jnana, is very important to them. They have no power to understand pure devotional service, shuddha bhakti, which is free from fruit of work and philosophical speculation. Worship of God done out of a sense of duty is never natural or unselfish. God has been kind to us, and therefore we should worship him. Right? These are the thoughts of lesser minds. Right? Because they'll say, that'll be considered very noble. Right? You know, it's that, you know, you're at least reciprocating. But the point is, if I didn't get good, then why should I worship God? Right? That's the weakness of this. Mm-hmm. Why is this not a good way to worship God? Because one may think, if God is not kind to me, then I will not worship him. Mm-hmm. In this way, one has the selfish, bad desire to get God's kindness in the future. If one wishes that God will be kind by allowing one to serve him, then there's nothing wrong with that desire. Right? So kindness is in the form of allowing to render service rather than I got benefit. Right? But the religion under discussion does not see it that way. This religion sees God's kindness in terms of one enjoying a happy life in this material world. Right? So that's the element. Vriti. In this set of four verses, 24 to 27, the reader is privy to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's pointed, devastating critique of a specific yet unidentified monotheistic religion. Why, a reader may wonder, is the name of said religion explicitly omitted? Perhaps it is out of respect for its divine founder, Acharya, and its legitimate practices and institutions. Another possibility is that the religion in question, Christianity, has since its inception lent itself to myriad, often conflicting theological formulations. Its doctrine is amenable to many different philosophical interpretations, and indeed, many have taken advantage of this amenability. Throughout its 200-year history, Christianity has exhibited a persistent tendency to divide and proliferate into parties, sects, heresies, and movements. In the above analysis, Bhaktivinoda Thakur disparages some especially illogical philosophical tenets in circulation throughout the Christian world, tenets which may not necessarily be shared in common by its varied denominations. Hence, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur proceeds with caution, so too is the reader advised. Right. Because the point is by Prabhupada says, is that, let's say, you know, we have the tendency to, some person is saying philosophy and it's not very right, so then one tries to attack that person. But Prabhupada's point was not that, it's the philosophy that's the problem. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not the particular practitioner, it's their philosophy of why they're practicing that. So what he's giving here is the, you know, unbiased underlying weaknesses that don't actually allow for pure devotion to manifest, because the overall discussion in this text is the difference between pure devotion, the natural nature or philosophy of the living entity, and mixed logical knowledge, the living entity that's conditioned. So that means it will never be pure devotion. So even if it's directed at God, it still won't be pure devotion. So those things that get in the way of pure devotion, right? So it's not even the point that karma is so important. It's that karma, by not accepting karma, then it makes it look like God's not fair, right? The point is no, he's very fair. It's that he gives you the choice. Therefore, you do good work, you get good results. You do bad, you get bad results. Does that make sense? Okay. Does that make sense? Because the point is, the principle is monotheistic. They'll all have these same problems, right? Because they can't explain these things properly. So that, therefore, it breaks down in their theology. Because we can see here is it has that one element to enjoy or to do good work, but at the same time is that good work is there's speculative knowledge. Right? So it becomes quite a wide range. What is your present day practice, you can have a very wide range from the very, very just only sentimental, you know, person to a sentimental fanatic to, you know, someone who's very intellectual, someone who just focuses on good work. They don't think about God at all. They just know, you know, yes, God wants us to do that. So therefore, they do nice work. But it's not thinking of God that they're doing the nice work. Right? So it's not actually devotion. It's just doing some nice work. You know, so ultimately, how will it be pleasing to God? Is it just nice work pleases God, or is interacting with God is what's pleasing to God? Yes.
Can we also say that since it's speculative knowledge, we can't actually be sure it is nice work?
Well, that's there. I mean, you have some basis. Okay, don't steal, you know.
But Arjuna, he goes into battle and kills people, you know. So if you're speculating...
No, you speculate and you come up with all kinds of things.
Yes.
You know, from completely pacifist groups to militant groups.
Yeah.
So that goes from here. In order to impart to the reader a greater sense of appreciation of our own Guru Parampara's spotless teachings, there's merit in providing a brief overview of Christianity's history. Okay. And then this quote by William Blake. Both read the Bible day and night, but thou readest black where I read white. In other words, because there is no parampara, therefore they come up with totally opposing ideas. Otherwise, why is it there's so many branches of Christianity? I mean, there's basically four main branches, and with each one of those, there's so many. I mean, at least in Catholicism, I think there's 200 that are acknowledged as not heretics. Like that. And so, and then within Protestant, there's so many branches, but there's no core central thing, so they just do whatever they like. And the other, Orthodox, then I'm not sure if there's only one kind of like Pope kind of person, or if there's a few groups, I don't know. It means that was... You know, and then most people don't even know about the Oriental.
Mm.
They don't even know it exists, you know. Okay, so okay. End here. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes on Monday.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
You know, in other words, you stick to these points not because they can't answer them, you stick to these points because it points out how